Hey roofers, after helping over 1,900 contractors make more net profit and avoid some pretty serious cash crunches by simply planning ahead, I'm going to be hosting an annual planning web class with Ryan Groth, CEO of Sales Transformation Group.
On November 4th, join us as we talk about the top roofing contractors in the country and how they're planning their off-season to not see a slowdown, but actually increase sales and hit their goals. We'll also talk about an amazing sales training plan to help you crush 2026.
Plus, we're going to be giving away a tried and tested framework for annual planning and cash flow projections you can use to prepare your year ahead and predict your profit. Don't leave 2026 to chance. Join us on November 4th and get your plan in place before it's too late.
This is a web class you will not want to miss. Click the link below to sign up. We'll see you there.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. If you're like most contractors we work with, you probably want three simple things. More profit, more time, and probably a little less stress, right? Well, the good news is there is a framework designed to help contractors with all three of these in about a year or less. Not by working more, but by implementing these six core systems. And today, we'll be replaying a webinar I hosted where we walk through those six core systems step by step with appropriate templates for each one. So be sure to grab those templates in the link in the description so you can follow along. Now, let's dive in. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Welcome, everybody, to our webinar today, our web class today, on how to hand off production, paperwork, and sales. Essentially, how do you delegate more down to your team, pull more back time back for yourself, and actually operate this business like a real owner, right? I think a lot of us, we get stuck on a lot of the day-to-day things that we probably know we shouldn't do and are seeking to organize a better organization around us so we can run a real company. And doesn't always happen that way, right? Looks good on paper, but doesn't always happen in reality. So about an hour with you guys. To kick things off, I just want to make sure that for those who haven't been to one of these web classes in the past, that you know how to find the chats. This is a platform called LiveStorm, very similar to Zoom. But let's just start by just saying a quick hey, hello in the chat. Maybe just let me know who you are, what industry you're in. So actually, yeah, best thing, let's do this. Where are you from and what industry you're in? I'd be curious to see where everybody's at as well, all over North America, I assume. So Sam, Serge, I see you guys typing. Keep going with that and I'll read some of that. So I'll use this chat as we go. As much as I'm going to present, I've got a little sidebar where you see me looking left. It means I'm reading your guys' stuff. So Jesse, you're the first of the punch. South Dakota, remodeling, welcome. Sam from Wyoming, excavation. Hey, environmental consulting. Cool, HVAC. Great, okay. Thank you. Okay, keep that going and I'll ask questions as we go. So just if you have the ability to type, let's have this conversation here. So quick, who am I? My name is Danny Kerr. I'm one of the co-founders of something called Breakthrough Academy. We've been at this for 10 years to help systemize contracting businesses for growth. I've been a contractor since I was 18 years old. So I started in a franchise organization many, many years ago. And I would say more than anything, learned kind of like the business of contracting. I don't think I was naturally attuned to what that took right away, but I remember my first couple of years, my whole motto was, I will just get through this for your pure hard work. I used to work a lot of 80-hour work weeks, and my motto with people was like, I may not outsmart you, but I will certainly outwork you. And that was good for a while, but as the company grew and as my responsibilities grew with my people below me, I had to step it up. At one point, I had 100 staff under me, and the ability to manage like I used to when I started it was not really happening. So I'm going to go through with you a lot of principles today, but a lot of this also comes from my own learning and my own ability to be a better entrepreneur over many years. That was about 8 years of my life. I then went from running those franchises to operating something called Breakthrough Academy, which we started 10 years ago. And we've been for 10 years working with contractors. We have about 1,900 we're actively working with, over the last 10 years. And there's patterns that all of you have, especially when it comes to your business, that I'm going to show you the way through and how actually not only like how to run your financials properly or how to hire properly, but how all these things work together to be one machine. So curious before I get going, who's been in situations like I've been in? Who's worked 80 hours a week for far too long? Maybe you don't do it all year round, but there's times of the year. Who's done that this year? Give me a yay or nay on this. where you're just like, there is no day off. So let's get away from that. And I will show you some thoughts on how to fix that today. Okay. So what is Breakthrough Academy? We are here to transform honest, hardworking contractors into well-balanced leaders and thriving entrepreneurs. Yes, systems matter. Yes, profit matters. But I think all of it is arguably useless if you don't have a good life. So you'll see that theme throughout. But how do we make sure we can have a sustainable, balanced career as an entrepreneur? Maybe throw in the chat as well. How many of you, you are an entrepreneur for the rest of your life. Like, this isn't just, hey, I'm trying it for a couple of years to see if it's good. If not, I'll get a job. Like, how many of you have to be an entrepreneur? Because I know I certainly do. And I remember early on, my wife said to me, Day, like, if you're going to actually do this as a career, like, you have to get better at this, because I can't have kids with you. I can't move forward with you if I can't trust that you can be balanced in your approach. So that was a lot of my 20s, was learning how to do that. And the mission we have at BTA is a lot around that, because I think just 10Xing your business and being more profitable is a very short-term way of thinking. But if you actually plan to be here till you retire, running this company or running a company, I think it's important that we figure out how to create balance along the way. Okay. Dan wants to retire. Cool. All right. So what have we got here? Well, we've tracked the growth of, like I said, 1900 businesses over 10 years. Our members work with us for about 30 months on average each. And we've been able to see the patterns within their financials, within how they operate, how they make decisions, and how their personal habits are impacted. And so today I'm going to go through what's called the Contractor Breakthrough Analysis, which is essentially six systems that I think all of you need to run a more sustainable organization. So that is the plan. We'll touch on these six core systems, and then at the end, we'll talk about how to implement change. We obviously have a program where we help contractors do this. We have hundreds and hundreds we work with every single year. And it's the time of year, I'd say, for a lot of you to start thinking about 2026. And if we can help you have a more organized, better year, then we should probably chat at the end. So we'll talk about that near the end. To help everybody, we always give away tons of templates. I was just looking at our resource package. It's massive. So don't be intimidated by it, but everything I'm going to talk to you about, I will give you a resource on. And there's even stuff in there that I probably won't even have time to touch on, but it should really help all of you just get an understanding of what good financial tracking looks like, what a good employment agreement really looks like, what a good way to build your organizational structure looks like, and use these tools in your business, especially as you plan out next year. So I'll give you guys a link at the end. Make sure you download it. And it should, if nothing else, just help you get traction on some of these concepts. Okay. So I see you guys going on the chat already, which is great. Here's my first question to you. What is your biggest challenge right now? What's going on in the business? Is it sales and marketing? Is it organizing and having some time for yourself? Is it hiring people? Is it understanding how to, you know, be financially profitable? Is it organizing production and managing subs? Is it, what is it that's going on in your business right now that you need the most help with? So Amon's first to the punch with sales and marketing, Josh hiring, Omega Capital and hiring. Okay. Hiring. Yeah. A lot of hiring. Profit, sales and marketing, how to scale profitably and systematically. Yeah. Matthew will definitely be covering that. All of the above. Cool. Getting people to fall through on odd jobs. Yeah. Keeping design timelines. Yeah. It's a lot of, it's like, it's finding good people, right? Isn't it? It's for both customers and for employees. And then it's having a system where that can turn into a nice, sustainable, profitable organization. So we'll touch on that. It's like people, profit, and process is kind of what I've identified it to be for a lot of us. And the truth is, a lot of us are on this journey, right? Like, all of us started in this way, just the way I started, where it's like hustling every day, trying to get quick results. We're problem solving a lot. I find a lot of entrepreneurs were very good problem solvers naturally. So we use our ideas to get through, you know, to become successful. But we do often run things from the hip a little bit. It can be pretty exciting, but also pretty stressful. How many of you are here even on this webinar because you're seeking a better way to do things, like more of an enterprise level way of being an entrepreneur, where you have more controlled effort, predictable results, you're out of the day-to-day a bit, right? You're focused on implementing systems, developing good people, you know your numbers, right? You have SOPs in place. How many feel this? I think when I, you know, I just got back from the Build Show, and when I go and do these kind of industry events, especially, it reminds me that most of us in this industry are in this growth zone. I think we're all aware of this. I think the path to get there is pretty murky, and we're kind of guessing and testing our way along the way. So I'll show you today a path that I think, you know, is probably the most impactful one I've seen in the industry. And I think for a lot of us should give you a little bit of a step-by-step, almost like direction on what to actually go do. So we're going to be talking about this concept called the contractor growth method, right? Breakthrough Academy for 10 years has been doing this with so many businesses. There is a path of least resistance. I call it like the Honda Civic of design. There's so many ways you could operate your organization. My proposition is that this is probably the most effective way, the simplest way to make sure that you get the results you need. And again, you have a life along the way. And we've got a lot of data on this, right? So every year we have $2 billion of construction revenue that runs through this management process. We see average profit increasing per member by about 69%, which is pretty monumental. And it's not as hard as you think when you start to look at all the lost opportunity in your the way you operate, all the 1%, I call them, that are lost due to inefficiencies. We're seeing about $168,000 made per member in that first year and about a 25% increase in overall revenue as well. So there's lots of examples of this. I mean, I could show you one just with Mason, but you know, we took him from 500K to 6 million and the process brought his team from 2 to 15 plus his subs. And the biggest thing actually, it's not even marked there, should be, is his time. We took him down from 60 hours a week down to 28, right? Because business was operating with or without his need for constant involvement. So how do we do this? How do we actually systemize an organization for growth in a sustainable way? Well, the first element of this contractor growth method is financial controls. How many of you feel you can do a better job managing your financials, knowing kind of what your job costs are, knowing what your overhead costs are, knowing how to make a margin? How many of you feel like you probably need to know your numbers a little bit better than you currently do? I think a lot of us, you know, maybe have a high level, even say budget, but like we don't look at it every single day. We don't analyze it. And the answers really are in these numbers, right? And I think for a lot of us, we need two key systems to help. Right? QuickBooks and some sort of CRM or project management software. I assume at this point, most of us have this. Give me a yes or no on this, but my assumption is that most of you have some sort of QuickBooks, right? You use that and some sort of project management software. This is stage one for all of us. But what I'll say after years of doing this is we're all missing one key element, and that is a proper dashboard. Something that helps us see goal versus actual. And I've been to, you know, Builder Trends head office. I've sat down and chatted with Noify. I've looked at, you know, Jobnibus. I've looked at all the systems that are out there. Most of them are missing a clear dashboard where we can actually go goal versus actual on sales, production, and your financial metrics. And all three of those obviously matter. And what it allows us to do is set up a plan. So with all of our members, we're going to look at how much revenue you need to produce in order to make a certain margin. We then break that down into a sales plan. So we figure out how many sales you need to hit, what your average job size should be, what your sales ratio should be. And then we figure out your production plan, how much dollars you need to produce per month or per week, and how many hours should be out in the field or subs allocated. And it becomes a game of math, right? And so you can see on this dashboard, average job size for the company was planned to be at $10,000 for this year. They're above. They're closing jobs a little bigger, 11,551. Their sales ratio or closing ratio is also hidden. They're at 45% closing ratio on a goal of 41. But a sneaky little bugger that no one would probably notice is that their lead capture rate's off. They're converting 71% of the leads they get into quotes, and the goal was actually 80. And if we don't fix this, we have to either, you know, we have to either do a better job of this or we have to generate more leads. And so I have, as an owner, can look at this early on in the year and see this trend and start to decide, is this because we're not getting back to our leads fast enough? Is it because maybe we're getting too many paid leads that aren't really serious? Or maybe we joined this Angie's List thing that all looks good because it gives us lots of leads, but they're all garbage. Like, what's causing this degradation of my lead capture? And I can either fix it, problem solve it and fix it, or I can go and get more leads. But being aware of this actually helps me target where to put my time, money, energy, and effort, right? So with all of our members, we have a dashboard with them. Every 2 weeks, we're reviewing these metrics. And then below, we're setting goals on what to go after and what to change. Because I think as the business gets bigger, we get less aware of what's truly wrong. And we'll start to make gut calls like we always have, which always has made us successful. And those gut calls can sometimes cost us. Question for you guys, how many of you guys have spent a month on something, whether it's hiring the wrong person, starting the wrong type of project, going after a new CRM or new software, or just you're excited about something because it feels good. And then a month or two later, you realize it was a complete waste of time for you and your team. Who's had this? I certainly have, right? And it's being aware of the numbers of your organization, the goals versus the actuals, that actually helps you pinpoint not only your gut, your feelings, but your head, like actually make intuitive decisions, right? There's a difference between blind risk and educated risk. And a dashboard is a first step for a lot of us. Okay. So this is the first piece. And actually, just to give you guys an idea, one of the things we're going to give you guys today, oops, let's see if I can pull this up, is a example dashboard. So you can play around with this, but it incorporates your strategic plan, your implementation plan, helps you with bookings and sales, and like track the numbers of the business, which is pretty cool. And that'll be in your download package. So make sure you look out for that. So how do we turn these insights into actions? Well, I find most owners, once they know all these numbers, they feel a little safer. They feel a little more secure in their ability to go make a change, but their people don't really get it. And so you have to go and start to define the roles within your company. How many of you feel this right now? Your team isn't quite as aligned with what you want to go achieve, your long-term vision, because their roles aren't defined. They're stepping over each other. They're repeating each other's work. And there's a bit of rub in all of this. And actually, as a result, you often as an owner are doing a little bit of everybody's job. How many feel this in the company right now? Give me some yay or nays on this. The first step to helping with this is to build an organizational structure, which again, I know from talking to a lot of you that we do this. You know, give me yes or no's on this, but I think a lot of you build this. But what you're missing is you, because you don't know your numbers as well as you probably should, you're not able to give everybody in the company a number to go achieve. What these numbers are called are deliverables. And what you want to be doing in the company is thinking through what are the quality, volume, and profit metrics that matter most in our company, again, from our dashboard, that I can bring down to each role in my organization. So I don't have to micromanage everybody and everything. They know that their job is to achieve these numbers, right? So, you know, Christopher Columbus, this project manager, is trying to achieve $3.1 million in produced revenue with a 95% customer service rating and is in charge of hiring. The true crew leaders are in charge of the breakdown of that revenue, so 1.5 and 1.6. They don't know as much about customer satisfaction, so they're in charge of hitting crew. Or sorry, they don't have as much control over some of the other like specific numbers. So they're in charge of the crew hitting their budgets, their hours budgets, because that's where costs can be the most controlled for them. But everybody has a number that they're directly in charge of, and if they achieve that number, they know that they've done their job. The next step to build on top of this, I would recommend, is to build employment agreements where those numbers are baked right in. So at the top of any agreement, you want to start with the deliverables. What are the numbers you need to achieve to be worth your weight to the organization? Again, I'm going to give you guys an agreement on this. I think it's 10 pages or so long. It's got some of the legal stuff in there, but more importantly, it's got some performance stuff in here. So we start with these deliverables. We use them to then define what the person's accountabilities are. What is it you do in your job, right? So for deliverable one, aka delivering projects on budget and on schedule, or 2.5 million at a 44% margin, it's kind of this person's goal. Here is your accountabilities. Here's the things you need to do in your job. And so for each deliverable, we have an accountability section. And this way I'm not saying, hey, the crews are behind on schedule, or hey, you're not selling enough, or hey, you know, quality's down. It's not subjective anymore. I can say we're behind on production by, you know, 10%. We have quality ratings at an 8 out of 10 when it should be at 9.5 out of 10. And we can talk numbers and then relate that back to what actions of their job they're doing or not doing. Next big thing in an agreement is to make sure you have a reporting section. Who do they report to on all these metrics? When do they report in? What are they reporting on, right? And then to make sure what's good for them is good for you guys, you want to incorporate their bonus structure to these deliverables, right? So this brings clarity to the individual. They understand what their job is, what it's not, and what they need to go achieve for the year. And you kind of gamify this whole situation for them. Now, to do a good job as a leader, this was a big thing I had to learn, was not to just give them numbers and set them off on their way, but to become their coach. And so I had to set up, now I didn't do this with everybody on my team, but anyone who's running production, running sales, or running my office, my job was to help them. Actually, if you look back here at this org structure, you can see this is also defining who reports to who. So you can see the president here is reporting to three main people. They're then running the teams. And so within that, I'm doing some little GSNR with each one of those three, where I'm keeping a pulse on what's happening in their business. I'm holding accountability to these goals, and I'm providing any clear direction and support with them. You see, I find our team might have an idea of what they should go do for the next couple of weeks, but if I leave them without any oversight, they could spend a week or two doing things that are totally useless. And so GSR helps align them to the goal every 2 weeks. This is often how often I meet with them. So every 2 weeks we're sitting down, we're going over their goals versus their actuals, and I'm becoming more of their coach than their boss. And so we use a dashboard that looks something like this. I'm going to give you guys an example dashboard of this as well, so you can check this out, but it's for each major employee that runs part of your company to have their annual deliverables front and center, and then a place for them to set goals and look at last week. How did their goals go? Where did they hit? Where did they miss? By how much and why? And then what are their goals for the next 2 weeks? And what are they focused on? This allows you to manage and lead your team without having to micromanage every part of who they are, and not also just leave them completely high and dry to go figure it out without enough communication. How many of you do something like this right now? You have goals for your team, you have goal setting review meetings, and you're driving your team up based on performance. Teddy asks, who is responsible for updating the dashboard? It's a great question, Teddy. So on Fridays, I usually get my team to do their update, and they'll be putting in how things have gone. They'll be spending some time reflecting. And then on Monday mornings, I'm often doing my prep. So I'm reviewing each person, what they thought their goals should be, how things actually went. And then I'm getting into about a half an hour long meeting with each one of them on Monday afternoons. And that way I'm setting up their week for success. So they spend the rest of their week doing good things. And there's often goals that we change or initiatives that they change because I realize, hey, this is not quite as important as you think it is. And I'm there to help guide them in that. Okay. If you want to get more into GSR, I did do an episode on this. Aaron, if you want to throw this in the chat, but this will step you through more of like how to do a GSR step by step. So for those of you who are, you can see you do a light version of this. That's good. Want to build some robust process around this. Now, for this level of accountability to work, let me know this. What do you need to be able to drive results within people? What kind of people do you need? What's important about your team to have this level of accountability? So Teddy says trust. Yeah, that's a big one. What else? Let me know. What is missing to have this level of an accountability process with your team? Consequences. Yeah. Patience, rationale. Totally. It's skill. Yeah. A level team players. Amin, you got it. You need to have good people. You need to have people that are aligned, that want to be held accountable, right? I won't get into it as much today, but there's a thing that you actually need to interview people on, which is called attainment. It's the preference to set and hit goals. And so you need to have good hiring systems. Now, I could teach, you know, a class all day on hiring. I used to spend a lot of years hiring. But here's one trick I would say for all of us that I find a lot of us are missing. To have a good hiring campaign, you need to be able to understand who your ideal candidate even is. So yes or no on this, how many of you have an ideal customer? Maybe you did it with a marketing agency. Maybe you just have it somewhere in your files, but how many of you know who your customer is, right? How many of you know who your ideal candidate is though, right? Who is the person that would work hard for you, that would love getting up in the morning and producing for you? Who would get along with these types of goals and excel and thrive? I'm sure in your head you have some level of it, but not many of us have this actually written down. And so my first recommendation would be to think about this, and I'm going to show you a way to do this in a second, but know that once this is established, this will actually help you reverse engineer the entire recruiting funnel for that specific actually role, interestingly enough. So if I'm looking for a project manager, you know, for my company, I need to define what that person's all about, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, what they love about their job, what they hate about their job, what gets them up in the morning, and use that to help design my job postings. Use that to help me make sure I can generate the right types of applicants. When I do my interview setup calls, I have some questions because I know what I'm actually looking for versus just random questions. Behavioral interviewing, I know what traits to actually look for in a person, and I can make sure my selection is accurate. So I'm going to give you an exercise to do on this, but I think a lot of us will go out and start to recruit and not fully understand who we're actually looking for. And then when we finally have the final candidates in front of us, we just kind of pick the best of who we met with that month or that week, right? So I recommend you go through this exercise, and this will help you dial in who you're actually looking for. The first time I ever did this, this is a good example of this. I was hiring a project manager, actually, and I sat down with my best person and I said, man, I'd love to know what you love about this job. What do you hate about this job? What gets you up in the morning? Why do you stick around with me? Like, essentially, like, why are you here? And he said to me things like, Danny, I love that you're my coach more than my boss, right? I love that you give me freedom and autonomy to drive crews in my own way. I love that you give me bonuses for hitting goals. And he's like, you know, I used to be the quarterback of the football team in high school, and I have that same mentality there. The only difference is I actually get paid to do this job versus before I didn't. And I realized, even just for my ads, how much I didn't speak to any of that, right? So I changed my ad set from need a project manager, drive company truck, competitive wages, to need a quarterback to drive our teams. looking for a coach more than a boss. Wish you had freedom and autonomy to drive crews in your own way. Love scoring touchdowns, but wish you actually got paid for them. Boy, do we have a job for you, right? And I spoke to my ideal candidate, and my ads stood out far and away from most of my competitors, right? I read through your guys' ads. Everybody posts very similar stuff, and if I'm honest, they kind of suck, and I can tell that they're not targeted to a specific type of person. And you'll find when you do this, you're going to get people that apply to you that actually write you in the email that when they send you a resume saying, hey, man, I read through your ad and I don't know who you are, but we need to talk. Like, that is me, right? And so when you speak to an individual versus too broadly, that you start to get way better results. So there's so much we could teach about hiring, but I would say the lowest hanging fruit for almost all of us is just to build an ideal candidate profile based on who we're actually looking for this role. And the only way we're going to be able to build an ideal candidate profile is to know what the role actually is, right? So it's defined with the employment agreement and a part of the org structure of where they hit, right? You guys notice so far how some of this is connected, right? I'm defining my KPIs, my goals for the company. I'm building those into the org structure. I'm then building those into the employment agreements. And then I'm using that to help identify my ideal candidate. And I can use that to drive my recruiting campaigns. A lot of things I talked about today are good concepts, but what's probably most important for all of you is to like realize that this is one machine. This is one business mechanism that drives the entire organization. Okay. If you want to look more into just recruiting processes, Aaron, I don't know if you have a link for this, but Brad Gordon is a really good example of this. We took his net from 7 to 15 along the way, but really recruiting was one of the biggest things that drove a lot of his success. So Aaron, if you're able to share a link on that, it'd be helpful. Okay. As we all know, we're busy hiring. And I do believe that is 50% of the battle. But if you hire good people, what must you have ready for them on the back end to make sure they stick around? If hiring is 50% of the battle, what's the other 50% to develop good people? Let me know. Systems, Teddy says. Yes. But specifically to systems, it's the training and onboarding systems. Right? It's the understanding that what I'm holding you accountable to in your job has to be defined within my organization. Otherwise, you're going to invent your own way. How many of you have hired a really good person on paper that has lots of experience and you leave them just to go rip because they've apparently got the experience they need? And you come back a few weeks to a month later and they've created just a big old mess. Who's found this? People that look good on paper, you hire them, you're excited about them, but you didn't train them. You let them kind of go. And they're completely offside, right? Because as a company, we have to define our processes. So Teddy says systems. Yeah, for sure, Teddy, systems. But systems on what this role needs to go achieve and what success actually looks like. So to do this properly, the first thing we need to do is build an onboarding checklist. This is the simplest thing. If you don't have this, I highly recommend you start to think through this. But when you've built a good employment agreement with key accountabilities of what that role actually is, you need to actually stare at that and think through, do I actually have a checklist of all the skills and tasks required to achieve those things? And do I have a way to train that into that person's role, right? You never want to assume. You always want a way to make sure this is the skills checklist, this is the task checklist, and I'm going to, when I train you, check off that we've gone through each one of these things together, right? Now, if you want to go deeper, which I do recommend we do, we need a way to show what success looks like. So for each task or for each thing that that person needs to do, so you can see in this example, this is about setting up a sales appointment. We need a step-by-step walkthrough of how to do that properly, right? So these are called competency models, or a simpler way to look at them is just like a skills checklist. And so I can use this during training and be like, this is how we set up a sales appointment. And I'll show them the checklist and I'll be going through it with them and checking off as we show them each element of what a good sales appointment setup looks like. I'll then give this to them so they could use this at any point they want. They can access it while they're in their day-to-day operations. And then the kicker is that I also use this same format to evaluate their performance. So if I'm doing a performance evaluation on how they're doing, it's not just based on how I feel about them. It's based on their ability to achieve the tasks specific to how they're laid out in their role, right? In these competency models. So it's used during training. It's referenced for them whenever they need it. And then it's for you to come back and do an evaluation on. So you can see at the top, these things have a completed successfully check mark, a partially completed or a not completed mark. And so for each element of this, you know, sales appointment setup, as an example, you can mark off what they've done well, what they haven't done well, and start to really pinpoint areas for improvement, right? this creates a lot more clarity versus like, you need to be better at setting up sales appointments. It's like, no, what specifically did I miss on? And then to take it even deeper is you can start to build standard operating procedures around these checklists, right? So these are clearly documented ways, both written, visual, auditory, so video, stuff like that, to show what great looks like. So when somebody's not doing well in a certain area, it's not just up to you to tell them out of what's on the top of your head or for someone on your team to just tell them out of what's in their head. There's a documented way to do it and there's a way to reference it. And I don't have people read through these front cover to back cover. They can see this one's 50 pages long. But what I do have them do is reference it as like a code book for their job, right? So I'm saying, hey, you failed in these three areas. I want you to go review essentially the textbook on how to do it properly and just review page 50 and page 36. And then I'm going to come back and evaluate you, right? But now there's a way of doing things in the company. Now these can evolve over time, but what's important is you have a base standard that this is how we do things in our organization. How many of you feel like you probably need a better way or a better documented way of doing things in the company? Like things are just getting a little bit, whatever, everybody does it their own way. I find with growth, it becomes a big thing, right? When it's just you with a few people, it's not as big of a deal. But as you get 10, 15, 20, 50, 100 staff, which I had at one point, whatever isn't documented is usually where the problem actually lies. So start with stuff like this. I was just looking through a resource package I'll show you guys, but we, more of it as an example for you, but we have built this to look at for you. This is a 63-page operations manual from how to do training, what to actually do day by day. Now, this you won't have these exact processes for yourself, but this is a really good example of what great looks like. And it gets into each section for that role. It has checklists in here and everything. So it's pretty robust. Again, I don't think you'll use it to the exact scope that it's been written, but you can use it as a template if you'd like. So there's a lot in here. Okay, let's keep moving. So with all that said, the reason I'm even sending you this is for 10 years, I have tried to teach this. I have tried to show people how to do this and everybody always agrees with me. Like I totally need this. And nobody really does it, not to the scope that it needs to be done. So we have now built this for our members. And it's a kind of a neat way we've organized it, but it's all organized by role. So there is an ideal candidate profile you can build off of that's already been pretty much 80% done by role. The job ad has been pre-drawn up. So you kind of have an idea of what these ads should look like. The employment agreement has been pre-drawn up. The onboarding plan has been pre-drawn up. The goal setting meeting structure has been pre-drawn up, and probably the big kahuna that we spent the most time on is the standard operating procedures have been all drawn up by role. So me coming from franchising, I've been just taking these same principles and being like, how do we build a franchise level experience for our members without them having to buy a franchise? And this was a big one. Anyway, all of it's done to about 80% scope. It gives you a lot of space to put in your own logo and put in your own specifics and delete our stuff, but at least you have a template to work off of, and it's all organized by role. So you can work on it based on the roles that you have in your organization. Okay. Like I said, for today, I'm going to give you some checklists on this and some manuals to reference for yourself. So as a company grows, we've started to understand how to drive our organization and our people. What do we need to be confident in to keep investing and hiring more people and putting in more overhead? And what do we need to know we've kind of like got coming? Kind of giving it away. To invest in this growth, what must we predictably have? Work upcoming, for sure. Yeah, I don't have one. Yeah, totally. So we need to have a good sales and marketing process. And we need to understand the levers that turn up and turn down leads, estimates, jobs, and dollars, right? So the first step I would say for a lot of you, especially it's, what is it, October right now? By end of year, I would recommend all of you do what's called a lead source distribution chart analysis. Take a look at what actually brought you an ROI to your company, right? So you can do this if your system tags all the leads that come in by lead source. If they don't, you can do this by downloading all of your leads and manually starting to put in what you know. But what I recommend is you start to give them an idea of what created an ROI and what did not, right? So you can see here, we've got vehicle wraps, job site signage, company attire, all this stuff. They all generated a different amount of leads. They all generated some estimates and some dollars, jobs booked. I can see the sales ratio by source. So what's like a really low converter, looks like our home shows are not converting well. And then I can see the dollars booked from all of it and the money spent. And probably the most important column here is the ROI multiple. So on average, I'm getting $21 for every dollar I spend in marketing. Good to know. So arguably anything below my average, I might want to look at a little more and see, is it actually worth putting more marketing dollars into? Anything above my average, I might want to look at why that's happening and see if I can double down on those things. But just by doing this exercise alone, you can take more control of all the money that's being spent in marketing and actually start to decide, how do I want to delegate this out next year? Because again, when you're a smaller business, you do this with your gut. You're kind of like, that felt like we got a lot of leads from doing that, whatever, paid ad thing, or felt like we got a lot of leads from doing that home show. But when you really look at the data, you start to see what's really going on. Like home shows, yeah, they generated 100 leads, but we only generated a 13 times ROI multiple on it. And we filtered through a ton of leads, which didn't really go anywhere, right? So food for thought on this one, but build a lead source distribution tracking chart to just analyze this at least once a year. The other thing I would recommend looking at is the difference between passive and active tactics, and what do you have in your business, right? So passive tactics are things where the customer comes to you. Active tactics are things where you go to the customer. How many of you have had a slower year than you anticipated this year? Give me a yes or a no on this, because I know different industries, different areas of the United States and Canada have been a little different, but give me a yay or nay on this. I actually would love to see a bit of a poll. So yes, slower, yes, no. About on track. Okay, good. No, slightly slower. Cool. So, and actually, how many of you operated in 2008, which was a bit more of a disruptive year than we're having now, but how many of you operated then? Because I remember in 2008, I was operating and I remember getting very few leads. And I remember talking to my coach about it at the time. And he had basically said, look, man, there's one thing you have to realize, even in the worst recession ever, there's still billions of dollars in transactions flying through the air every single day. And it's your job as an entrepreneur to figure out how to reach out there and grab it. And what I wasn't doing was a lot of these active tactics, right? I was sitting back and waiting for leads to come in my way. And yeah, they were slowing down. And so I doubled down on some of the stuff. I put way more signs up, put way more flyers up. We did a really good on-site marketing presence. And then I hired a bunch of door-to-door knockers actually to go door-to-door. In doing that, I had a lever that I could pull up or down to control how many leads I required to hit my goals. What I noticed was that my average job size went down by about 20% and my closing ratio went down by about 15%. And in seeing that, I was able to be like, right, this is a math formula. Like, to get this much revenue with this average job size, with this closing ratio, I need to get this many leads. And I wasn't getting enough leads. So I needed to double that up and I needed to figure out which sources to double that up on. And a lot of them were active, to be honest. And it allowed me to pull the lever down. We need to knock on this many more doors. We need to put up this many more signs. And I worked out the math to hit revenue regardless of a downturn. So whether you're in a rough year or not, it doesn't matter to me. What I would say is all of you need to have control over some of those levers. Because if not, it becomes quite risky to add a lot of overhead without knowing or guaranteeing in your mind anyways that you have a path to get there, right? Another thought on sales and marketing is, I kind of already mentioned it, but to actually break down goal versus actual on a weekly or monthly basis. So I can see trends. I can see how many leads we're getting, how many estimates we're doing, how many jobs we're booking. And I can see, are we on trend or off trend? So you'll see in one of these forms we give you, there's a sales tracking form that allows you to start to look at, like, here's just like a simple sales plan, but I can start to see leads per month required, estimates per month required, jobs per month required, and dollars. And then I can put right next to it my actuals. So I can say, hey, we're at 124 leads and we should be at 125. We're on pace. I had 116 quotes on a goal of 115. We're on pace. 36 jobs booked on a goal of 37. And we booked 374,000 on a goal of 375. So we're right on pace. But if any of these things come off pace, I can see where in the funnel it's actually causing it. So you'll see this in the download package, but it's a helpful just like way to break this down. The neat thing is you can control this. You can be like, hey, we're going to go for 3 million. And boom, it automatically changes the requirements. So now I'm way behind. I'm not going to hit 3 million, right? All right, that's sales forecasting. How many do a sales forecasting right now? You have a bit of like a way to do what I just showed you. It's a great way to just set the goals up for the year. One thing I would recommend is make sure you adjust for seasonality for those who have it. And then you can see very clearly goal versus actual along the way and adjust as things go. Okay. Teddy, thanks for being honest. The most shitty rudimentary way. Okay. Well, you'll get a sheet that'll help you with this. Okay. Let's keep moving. So if everything I've just covered today, elements of it are valuable, some of it you guys need, some of it you want, maybe want over time. I don't think any of this happens out of a 1 hour webinar unless you have what? What do you need to make sure that ideas turn into action? That you don't just have more ideas and more ideas, but you actually have a clear what to move things forward. So time, tools, yeah, plan, yeah, with steps, 100% implementation. James, you've been to my webinar before. You need a plan. You need a proper way to set up goal setting and execution in the organization. And this starts with a strategic plan, right? So again, we're going to give you this, but this is a one-page plan where you can actually start to think through high level first. Where you want to go in 3 years? Why do you want to go there? What are the values that matter most in your organization? And given that goal or given that long-term trajectory, and some people go 5 or 10 years, I think 3 is good because it's more tangible. But given that, say, 3-year trajectory, what do you need to do this year, right? So what are the actual goals that we need to achieve in the next fiscal year? What revenue do you need to hit? What gross profit margins do you need to hit? What net do you need to be hitting? Given that, what are the critical numbers you need to go after, and so on? And when I've started to decide what those numbers actually are, I can start to actually look at them and decide, okay, well, for those numbers to be hit, we need to put in certain things into our business. And so right about now is a good time to start thinking about this. I would be scheduling either time in November or December to do a strategic planning session with yourself or with people in your organization, thinking through the numbers like I just showed you, and then taking those numbers and breaking them down into what we call annual initiatives. Which ones matter most? Which ones will actually directly impact the goal that we're trying to achieve? And which ones are just shiny objects? And so in this example, we've identified that we need to promote Rick into a repairs manager position. We need to implement company cam, we need to revamp our job site marketing. We need to recruit 3 new sales reps to handle the lead flow we're projecting. We want to sponsor 2 community events. And this allows us to know of all the random, you know, trade shows we go to and booths we talk to and all that. We know what we're looking for, right? And then we can make sure for our quarters, we have a broken down version of these bigger goals to slowly work on these things one quarter at a time, right? Focus. How many of you probably need to focus a little more than you currently are? Like you find one quarter, you're all about one thing, and then you shift strategies and your team gets a little bit thrown off by it, right? If you don't know where you're going and it's not clearly defined, that's easy to happen. But if you have a strategic plan and you understand where you're heading, this is something that will really help orient you and your team on what truly actually matters. Okay. You can take it further. You can break these quarterly rocks down into what we call a critical path. So for developing V1 of job site marketing campaign, we're going to be researching designers and print companies. We're going to get Jody to get in charge of that. We're going to book consultations with 2 of them. We're going to select our best fit. We're going to begin the design and testing process. We're going to review our submissions, and then we're going to approve and get things ready for being out in the field, printed out and ready. I've got different people on my team in charge of it, and I've got different weeks that we want to get these things done, right? No different is managing a project, right, for a customer. You want to think through the order of operation, who's doing what, and when we want to get it done by, but you're just doing it for your business itself. Because if you don't do this, things come in a little bit hodgepodgey, and we tend to kind of just rush projects, or we don't think through the steps properly, and we miss on things. The final step with a lot of our members is we take a lot of this and we start to set up their calendars, right? So our coaches will do goal setting review meetings with the owners of the companies we manage. About 600 we manage right now, and about 18 coaches, I believe, on staff. Each one of them is thinking through their strategic plan, looking through their quarterly initiatives, and then helping set up their critical path for what's important. We're then using that to dictate what goes into the calendar. So you can see in this is an example of an owner, but it's like they've got their goal setting meetings with their team. They've got key initiatives they're going to be working on in the company. And then they've also just got other time for their day-to-day in their business. Or we're changing their time from being all about just reactionary stuff to building towards the future, right? Let me know right now, how many hours do you guys spend on the future of the organization versus the day-to-day? So if you look at like week to week, how many hours a week are you spending working on the future of the company? Give me a kind of a rough number. I'd be curious to know. What, James, 1 to 3, 5 to 10, 0.5, right? If we're not laying the tracks out in front of our people, often the train falls off the tracks. 20 is good, Lane. That's good. Simon, 15. And what will happen for a lot of us is as the business grows, our goal is to be 40 hours a week, really, into the future of the company. Now, you don't get there overnight, and 1 to 2 hours to start is probably a good place. But once you hit 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, you should be 5 to 10 hours a week working on the future of the company. Once you get to 3, 5, 6, you should be 20, 30 hours a week. Once you're at 6 to 10, you're looking at like, that is your job, is to lead the organization, develop great people, and build awesome systems for those people to work within. Because your impact as an owner comes from their hours, not yours anymore. Here's a good thing to calculate with your phone. Everyone grab your phone for a second. Go to your calculator and calculate this. Take the number of people that you lead, and this can include subcontractors, okay? So right now on our team, about 50. And then times that by about, let's say 35 hours in a week. Because I know that I'd love to say everyone works 40, but sick days and rain days and stuff. Let's go 35 hours a week. So right now I'm managing 1,750 hours. How many are you guys managing in a week? What do you think? How many hours do you manage? So number of people times say 35 hours in a week. So we've got 245, 350, 700, right? You can't do all 700 of those hours, but you can impact them by doing good goal setting review meetings on Mondays, by setting up initiatives ahead of time and making sure you're working on them and leading the team properly, right? For those of you who need more time to do this, here's a quick just like time hack for you. I would recommend, especially this time of year, because you're about to go into your next fiscal year, probably hire some more people, all that. Here's how to regain 5 hours a week. Make a list of everything that you do in a week. How many of you do things right now that you shouldn't be? Actually, maybe give me an idea of what you do. What's one thing you do right now that you probably should not be doing? It's a $20, $30, or maybe even $50 an hour task that needs to be delegated. It's the thorn in your side. Fix a tire. Give me some more. What are the things we're doing? Managing projects. Yes. Scheduling work. Yes. Ensuring guys are loading proper product. Product proper. Yeah. Just hire admin assistants. Yeah, Teddy, that can be the biggest one for a lot of us. Project managing. Yeah. Bookkeeping. Office management. Right. So this is the stuff. And within that list, we need to circle the stuff that's highest time consumption, but lowest skill. And that's grounds for either delegating that to someone in our organization, looking at a way to automate it potentially with a system, or that could be enough to be arguably hiring our next person, because there's hidden potential in your ability to go and run your company better. Every hour you're spending doing those things is an hour you're not spending working on the business properly. Okay. So I've gone through a lot. We've talked about financial controls, sales, production, financials, all on a dashboard pulled from QuickBooks and our project management software. Using that to then build out our organizational structure so that everybody in their role knows what their goals actually are and who reports to who on those goals. We then talked about baking that into the employment agreements so that everybody has a goal clearly stated with accountabilities directly tied to those numbers. We then talked about using that employment agreement to reverse engineer our recruiting process and find out who our ideal candidate is for that specific role and building a more premeditated recruiting flow. We then talked about using that that employment agreement to build out our training process. What's the checklists that I need to make sure I train somebody on? What's the way to define what good looks like, and what are the standard operating procedures that are defined? We then talked about using all of that system to guarantee a production roadmap where we need to have sales and marketing dialed to understand where we're getting leads, where we're not, what's creating our ROI, what's not, and track goal versus actual on our sales process. And finally, wrapping all of that into a strategic plan where we know where we're going 3 years from now. We know what that means for this fiscal year, what initiatives we're going after and which ones we're not, probably most importantly. And then how that pertains down to our activities in our calendar, what we actually do to work on the business while still maintaining the day-to-day. What do you guys think? Out of everything I just talked about, what's the most important one for you? Because I know that some of you are probably, might be below 1 million right now. Some of you are maybe over 10 million. So depending where your business is at, what do you need to work on the most right now? So Julian's financial controls, Simon, goal setting, or that would be sales and marketing, number 5, I believe. Jerry defined roles. Hiring key people. We all have things, right? But what's important is to see how, when you work on these things, how they fit within this system, right? Because if it's just working on a employment agreement that you got from Google or ChatGPT or you got from your lawyer, it doesn't mean much until it's tied into the KPIs. if you're working on hiring someone for your company and you just have a loose idea of who you're looking for, it's not tied to the role that that person's actually going to do, chances of success are much lower. It's when you can tie all of this together to be one machine that this thing truly starts to become a management process that pulls the owner out of the day-to-day, right? When I look at this with our members that we work with, I'm kind of like, your job is to turn this one crank, and that crank should turn sales, production, and admin. And the operations of the business should be operated by that, by those down legs. And yes, I get not all of us have those people in those roles yet, but the goal is to get each one of those legs built and be a master of driving and developing our people so that they can go run the company, right? So other cool examples of this, Ian Price, you know, we took him from a net of 6 to 21%, took his hours down to half from 80 down to 35, 35 to 40. Brandon actually just sold his business this year, but he brought his net from 5 to 16, his hours from 50 down to 25, right? As you saw with how many hours you guys manage, you cannot go do all those hours, but it's certainly easy to get caught up in them all. And it's understanding that my job is not to go do all things for all people all the time. My job is to lead the organization. So to implement good change in this, just overall, just thoughts, get started. There's lots of little things that you could go do, but I would say progress over perfection for those of you who are perfectionists. If you're not sure where to start, make sure going into 2026, you have a strategic plan built. I'm going to give you a template on this, so make sure you do that. And you need a way to be held accountable, right? So as a company, this is what we do. Like I said, our whole mission is transforming honest, hard working contractors into well-balanced leaders and thriving entrepreneurs. We have a pretty big track record at this point at what actually works, what doesn't. And we work very much in this realm, right? Things we've just talked about today. If I just gave people templates and did webinars, I don't think we'd create the change that we have in our company. I think it comes from our coaches, to be honest. That's a big part of it. Our community, all of our members work together. They share and they collaborate every single day. It allows us as a company to make sure that, you know, this industry is moving forward, but that you guys have a lot of direction in what you're actually doing. What I find different between a lot of other organizations is they kind of just throw stuff at you, kind of like I'm doing today, but I'm doing it for free, right? But they don't actually have the infrastructure to hold the owners accountable. Owners need to know what their role is. Their roles need to then delegate down to their team. And if there's not clarity at the owner's level, the whole thing just doesn't work. The other thing I've found that helps a lot, like I said earlier, is we've built the system for you. Coming from a franchise organization, I know not everyone's going to do it. Not everyone's going to do it to the scope or spec. And I figure if we have so many companies in the same industry, why wouldn't we just build it for you guys? So we have a complete library so that everybody knows exactly what good hiring practices look like. Here's an example file, a template. Exactly what good financial practices look like. Here's an example file, a template. Then there's learning lessons for each one of these. And then there's a coach to help you walk through all of this as we implement each step or each thing one step at a time. And how do we pick what to work on? Well, we look at the strategic plan, right? We look at what is your actual strategic plan? What are you trying to get done this quarter? And then let's actually drive those things, both the numbers of the company, but also the initiatives, right? So you gave me some ideas of things, areas of a company that you need to work on. What's the one like tangible thing you can do from this? When you think about like, if I need to work on my hiring or if I need to work on my financials, what specifically do you want to do? What forms do you want to work on? What templates do you need to start? It's October 21st right now. Going into November, what are you going to do? Let's see a few of you type here. I've been following BTA for a little bit. You're doing great work. Yeah, thanks, man. Positioning, define roles, use the resources. Yeah. Yeah. Specific job descriptions, delegate responsibility. Julie, that's huge. There are so many things next year you can get caught into. And I think just by helping your team know what their role even is, I'm sure they'll appreciate it a lot too. Define roles, creating a dashboard, sales SOPs. Cool. Okay. So here's some next steps for all of you. First thing is to make sure you get these resources. So we'll put a link up for all of you. You can click there and grab them. One thing we didn't cover right away was the implementation checklist, but I actually took some time, our team took some time to build this out, which is nice. It goes through the pillars we just talked about today and actually gives you a checklist of what should actually be done. This provides extreme clarity so you don't just have random thoughts from your notes today. You can actually use these notes to figure out what exactly you need to work on for each section that we talked about and start to understand what actually is truly most important to focus on in the company. So that'll be the implementation checklist. There's a company dashboard tool, like I showed you, to track sales, production, and financials. There's an organizational structure example to show you how to build that into your team. A job description example, so how to build those numbers into a job description. Recruiting worksheets to actually help you with attracting talent. There's one thing we didn't cover was interviewing. There's an interview worksheet in there as well. And an annual planning template to actually help you build your strategic plan. But in all of this, and for those of you who've followed us for a lot of years and been trying to figure out, okay, how and when do I get involved with this? I'd recommend you also just check off that we should probably have a chat. It's end of year. And for a lot of us, it's time to start thinking through 2026. And if you've been operating with your best ability for a lot of years and you're starting to feel like where we go next, there's a lot of unknowns. I could use some direction. I could certainly use some support in this. We should chat. We, like I said, work with hundreds and hundreds of contractors, just like you work with your customers to go get the job done. You probably are a lot more efficient. You have the tools. You know how to execute more than a DIY project. We are no different for the business. We have a lot of fun doing it along the way. And yeah, I think for a lot of you, you're probably here for a reason. You're probably trying to figure out all the same stuff. We have built things once well for all of you guys to benefit. And I think it's probably time to have a chat. So be happy to book in a discovery call. Once you check off yes, you want to be contacted, you can get to a page here to select a time. Not all of you will get to this page. We do have a specific parameters of who we can work with and who we don't. If your business is a little too small, if you're not the owner, if you're not in the contracting space that we work with, you won't get this. You can communicate with us through phone or email though to ask more questions. But for those of you who are, you will see the ability to book a time. You'll sit down with our team for about 20 minutes first, and we'll start to get to know you better. We're going to flip the script. So we're going to listen to you and kind of understand what's really going on in your business and if we can actually help you. If we can, great. If we can't, we will let you know. From there, you're going to go through a business assessment. That'll be live on Zoom with one of the reps that you see there, and they're going to assess your financials, how you monitor things right now, your org structure, your job descriptions, your recruiting process, all the things we just talked about today. And they'll start to get an understanding of where you're strong and where you need some help. If we can help you, we have a program that will take you through. And we take time with each member individually, one-on-one, to make sure we have, just like you would with, you know, your customers or with your employees, we get to know you pretty well first to make sure this would be a good journey for you. So these are all free to do. But again, you have to be in the parameters of who we work with for this to work. And a lot of people ask why I don't work with, you know, startups and things like that, or people outside of this industry. I don't think we would be as effective if we weren't laser focused on our ideal customer, right? That person's usually roughly between 1 and 10 million. They're working on all these systems already. They've got some of them built and they're trying to assemble it. And they're needing some direction to do this and probably some accountability and want to get it done a little faster. I think we collapse timeframes in a big way. So make sure you sign up for that. If you haven't already, there's the link again. You can click on that to fill that form out and it'll get the process started. And if you're just looking for templates, sure, there's a ton in there. I was just going through it before we prepped this. There is a lot more than I even covered, but it's a bit overwhelming when you get into those templates. I would just say look through them and pick one or two. Otherwise, I've seen people kind of try and do everything and get distracted. What matters to your strategic plan? Maybe start with your strategic plan and then pick one thing at a time. If you want to go deeper on the analysis of these contractors that we've worked with for so many years, there's a really good episode we did on this, on the four phases of contractor growth. Because as much as I talk to this today, I kind of talk to it at a pretty broad level, right? I, in this episode, talk about different stages. So when you're smaller in startup phase, what matters most? When you're 1 to 5 million, what matters most? When you're 5 to 10 million, what matters most? And this can give you some insight on what to focus on for your company. Okay. All right, so all you guys fill that out. While you're filling that out, we can do some Q&A. So let me see, I saw some questions come in and let me go to the questions that have come so far. I'll start to answer a few, but feel free to type answers in the chat and I will go through some Q&A with you guys. So Julian, how do you get buy-in to block scheduling, priority management or project management? If you think this way, but the company owner lives in a reactionary world. Yeah, so Julian, I mean, it's speed of the leader, right? I think that at some level, I mean, so I'll tell you this, Julian, we don't work with not the owner, I guess you'd say, or people that are below the owner, because we can't create change without that owner's buy-in. So I mean, the best thing I could say is maybe send them this recording and say, hey, can we have a look at this? It's It does require their buy-in for this to really work. So I'd love to give you a better answer. I mean, I think there are tons of things you can do, but I think ultimately if they're a mess, it does bleed down into the entire organization. Teddy says, what's the coaching structure for BTA, frequency of meetings, et cetera? So Teddy, we do an initial 6-week onboarding with you where we're going through these 6 systems in a way more detailed way, where you're starting to build out your financial plan, your sales plan, your production plan, your recruiting plan, your org structure starts to get built. Like, we're essentially building a business plan with you for 6 weeks. We're then bringing you into a coaching scenario where you're going to get paired with a coach and industry group of peers that you're going to work with. The meeting structure, it depends on what you sign up for. There's different options, but it's roughly every week to 2 weeks that you're in a meeting of some sort. The one-on-ones can be every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, or every month, depending on what you need. And there's a lot of group work we do as well, where we have contractors together sharing, collaborating, and almost like a mastermind as well. So our team can go over it with you. It's also on our website if you want to read through a little more on it, but they'll take some time to show you the different ways we do it. But basically, everyone starts in a 6-week business planning process. Once we've got the business kind of thought through and we understand where the weak points are, all of you will take that plan and start to execute on it with the help of our coaching, our content, and our community. So Philip says, who do you recommend for startups? Coaching systems for renovations. I have some for painting. I have some for roofing. Do I have some for renos? Let me think through it, Philip. I don't have one offhand for renovations. For painting and roofing, I do. So I'll ask my team. And if Philip, if you send us an email, I will look into this a little more for you and see if we can give you a good answer. Okay. What else? Who's for painting? Eric Barstow. So when most people that are sub 500K to maybe even a million, Eric Barstow is someone that I've become good friends with. And he's been a good guy he'll build up the basics when somebody's just in startup mode, and then we will take them on from there. When is it time to focus on scaling versus increasing net profit, specifically for younger companies between one? Eric, that's a great question. So here's the thing, man. If your margins are too thin to really scale, do not scale. You need to probably go through job costing more than anything and understand where you're profitable. You likely need to increase prices. Most smaller companies do not charge enough because they're not prepared to pay for the overhead required for a larger business. I don't know what your industry, Eric. Just give me the industry. I can tell you rough margins you should be hitting, but you need 10 to 15, maybe even 20% net to be able to scale properly. And if you're sitting lower than that, it's not good. Our net is between in landscaping 10 to 15. Aaron, Eric, are you doing a lot of the work? So that 10 to 15 should not include you at some level. If you're doing landscape construction, 10 to 15 is not terrible. If you're doing maintenance, you need to be more in the 20s. So yeah, you're off site. You're probably good to scale up. Just you probably have 5% more you could be making, I would imagine. Yeah. Okay. That's not terrible. You're in the range. Just be prepared. Like, you're going to create overhead for the company as you grow and add like a production manager, a sales manager, and so on. So to do that effectively, you have to look at how much revenue needs to be produced to pay for those overhead costs. There's a budgeting exercise that you'll have in there as well that you guys can look through, but it helps you play with the numbers and just be like, if we go for this much revenue and we put in $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 of new costs for a new manager, how much revenue do I need to produce in order for that to make sense? So you can keep your margins at 10 to 15. Was this helpful for everyone? I hope it was. I mean, this is my life. This is what I've been doing for 10 years. This is what I believe in. And I think our industry needs, right? I think a lot of us are really good at the craft. We're even starting to get good at leadership. We're starting to be better at running a business. But I think very few of us have really tied this in to be like one machine. And we're all reaching and grabbing and trying to slowly figure it out. For me, doing this for so many years, I kind of want to shake our industry a bit and just be like, look, if there is a better way to operate. It's not that complicated, but it does require some forethought so we can begin with the end in mind and we know what we're building so we can build things with intention. Jerry's love the message. Thanks. Thank you for doing this. You got it, man. No, I came out of running franchises for so many years and all I could think about was how do we do this for the public? How do we do this for the broader industry? I wasn't sure this was going to work 10 years ago. I thought, you know, maybe all this stuff is just needs to be locked up into a franchise where you have control over the brand and the messaging. It's been really neat doing this with the average contractor in North America. I think a lot of you guys are needing this. I think the industry is growing a lot. It is professionalizing organically, and it's been neat to just guide how this is done. And it's interesting for me. Like, I go to trade shows and different conferences, and I hear people saying, oh yeah, like, I have your templates. And I'm like, you're not even in our system. So I think what we're doing is spreading. And I think it is becoming a bit more of a standard that we're setting for the entire industry, which has been it's been very rewarding. I will say that. It's a neat way to kind of make a living. Cool. So Simon, custom home builders, renovations, all of the above, substantial group. Yeah, cool. I'll leave you guys with this. At the end of the day, I said this comment earlier when we started, but when you're running your business, it's important to realize that it's not all just about being the hardest working person in the area or in whatever, hardest working person you've ever been. It's about maybe needing to do that for startup for a while and then identifying the patterns that matter most to actually have a sustainable company. I've got 3 kids. I've got a wife. I'm sure a lot of you guys have families as well. And I don't think any of us should plan on being entrepreneurs for our career if it requires us to work 60, 80 hours a week. Success to me is having the money you want, right? There's certain things you may want to achieve in life through money. But more importantly, having the time you deserve, because we're not meant to just work, right? One thing I've been thinking a lot about in my life is how addicted I am to work and how much I love being an entrepreneur and how it does take away from other things, like my chance to be a really good dad, my chance to go on hikes. And I have a cool Jeep that I want to take out more often. And just by the time I'm 65 years old, 70 years old, I want to be very proud of who I was and what I did. And I look at a lot of, not even just entrepreneurs, executives, business people, they get caught in the work and that defines them. And that's all they know themselves to be. I would like to be defined by more than just, you know, the work, right? I would like to be defined by a lot of things, my interests, my relationships. And I think that's important for a lot of us. We go through stages. When I was in my 20s, I was like all about just like pound, pound, pound. I'm 38 now, I'll be 40 soon. And I'm getting a little more introspective maybe. I'm just like who is daddy? What defines me? Right now, it's probably my wife and my kids, my business, my faith, and funny enough, my Jeep. I'm doing a lot of off-roading. But I'm enjoying it. And I think that's important to enjoy the journey. Like our values actually at BTA is just to be real, embrace the journey, and have a genuine care for people. So, okay. Well, if you guys have any more questions, I'm here. Can you give me metrics to aim for? What percentage of overhead, percentage of labor, et cetera? So Eric, you're in landscaping? Who knows? Yeah, landscaping. So let's think through this. Metrics for overhead. Well, let me say this, Eric. If you're in landscape construction, you should be making, I would say, about 30 to maybe top 40% gross profit. So that's profit after labor, subs, material. You then can spend 20 to 30% on overhead and then have the rest, say 10 to 20% net for yourself or for the company. If that gives you an idea. Labor percent varies widely, right? And you probably know this because you have some jobs with tons of material on them, some that have more just labor. So that can vary, but you should be targeting 30 to 40% gross profit off those jobs. If you're in service work, if you're doing like landscape maintenance, I would say more like 45 to 55%. Higher margins because there's more small jobs and there's more coordination overhead required to service those jobs. And you're typing. Yeah, I'll let you type. Thank you. Yeah. We get started with the program and very start. Hoping to get started. Cool. Teddy, I will see you for 2026. I hope to see you. What would a reasonable gross profit be for a home builder? Amin, tell me if you do custom homes, renovations, what's your average job size? Would help me, Amin. Because custom home builders can range from 5% net to 15, or even sometimes I've seen some of them 20 to 30 on the high end. But the larger the project, usually, the lower the margin. If you're doing cost plus, obviously that matters versus bid work. What is a reasonable gross profit for a home builder? Yeah, I mean, ideally home builders, if you guys can be making 10%, that is a nice stable range. 15 would be pretty good. I have some of our members making 20 to 30, and it depends on how you charge and if you're charging for project management versus just cost plus and so on. But financing versus bootstrapping funds. Yeah. There's a report that we've pulled on our members for average GP net and net profit and overhead costs by industry. I'll see if we can put that report in the downloads for you guys. Might help a little bit. Custom build and major renos. Yeah. So 750K to 1.5. Yeah. I mean, 8%. I wouldn't be lower than 8 is a good way to put it. So 8% would be like my bare minimum. I see the industry average is more like 2 to 4. I do not think that's sustainable. And I think you run a lot of risk if anything goes over on projects or you miss a change order or a customer doesn't pay at the end. So I would say 8% would be your like bare minimum. And then I would be shooting to figure out how to even get 10 to 15. So yeah, happy to help. It was fun today. Hopefully you guys, it sounds like all of you guys got something out of it, which is great. If you need anything else, make sure you fill out this form. We will connect with you guys. We will see where we can help you in your organization. We have been designed specifically for, you know, your industry. If you're between 1 and 10 million, I mean, basically we should probably chat so we can get into 2026 well with you, and we will start making change and we'll start making sure this next year goes well. Okay. Thank you guys. Awesome hanging. And I will talk to you all later.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.